another episode of the Sports Pro Podcast. My name is Tom Bassam. I am the host of the Sports Pro Podcast. And what you can probably hear behind me is the chatter of busy delegates meeting, greeting, shaking hands, doing deals at Sports Pro New York, our latest edition of our US-based event. What I'm going to be doing for this week's episode is giving you a little bit of a flavour of the discussion at the event, with a particular focus on one of the main event speakers that we had this year, and that was my boss, our CEO, Nick Meacham, talking to David Gandler, who is the CEO of FuboTV, a US-based sports streaming-focused platform that is currently engaged in a little bit of a battle with some of the biggest boys in the US sports media market, Fox, ESPN, and Warner Brothers Discovery, over their plan to launch a new sports streaming platform combining their services. We'll hear from Nick. We'll hear from David. We'll hear from an expert delegate on the floor here to get their thought on the issue. And that'll be pretty much it for this week's episode. So that's it from me. Over to a conversation I had with Nick. I'm with Sports Press CEO Nick Meacham. Nick, where are we?
We are in the official quote-unquote studio at the Marriott Marquis, where we've been right in the thick of day one's activity for Sports Pro New York. It's been quite a lot of hustle and bustle out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're very much in the belly of the beast here. We've got the VIPs on one side, staff on the other side, and just over the hall, we've got the main plenary room where you earlier spoke to David Gandler, the CEO of FuboTV. Interesting time for FuboTV. What did David have to say?
David's quite a character. I've spoken to him a number of times over the years on the Streamtime Sports podcast, which I might give a little plug to. No, he's been a great guest we've had over the years. And Fubo's story, for those not within the US, is a really interesting one. You know, they came on the scene a few years back as this virtual MVPD, which is effectively a replacement or product for cable. Share price went nuts because of, I don't know exactly the reasons why you would call it, maybe the Reddit effect or alike, or the more casual investor jumping on board the bandwagon at the time, and it blew their price off the charts. And since then, it has been coming down and down, even when their numbers from a finance perspective, their earnings have been heading in the right direction. He made a point in the conversation that I think 11 of the last 12 earnings calls, they've been above guidance from their plan. So by and large, they're heading in the right direction. He was very keen to talk about how they're tracking, but also some of the other news that's been happening in the industry, which has been quite big, which is the joint venture announcement with the streaming product with Warner Brothers Discovery, Disney, and Fox. So for those that have been following at home, they actually have a lawsuit against them and the group, or in his words, the cartel, which is used more than one occasion online and at this event. So it was really good to get a little bit of a feel as to the why and his take on all of that, which he was very keen to share with the audience.
Yeah, maybe let's have a little listen into that clip.
You talked about news in there. There's been a lot of news in the industry over the last few months. And one of the biggest stories that was a hit the 2024 Newswire was the announcement of the joint venture between Warner Brothers Discovery, Disney, and
you mean
Fox.
The sports cartel?
The sports cartel.
What was I am a thought leader.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk about your initial reaction when you heard that. Was it a surprise?
I'm not surprised. This is just the latest example of a pattern of bad behavior that we've seen since we launched the business. Again, this is part of the reason why you said, well, how do you have so many great quarters? I mean, let me just break it down to you. I mean, since this is a sports conference, I'll use Moneyball as an example. When you apply Moneyball analysis to Fubo, what you'll find is that our revenue per employee in 2003 was $3.3 million. You can fact check that. To put that into perspective, Netflix, which is obviously a highly scaled business, is roughly $2.6 million of revenue. And Spotify, $1.8 million of revenue. And our friends over at Roku, $1 million. And just to give you a social media stat, you know, Snapchat's around $900,000. So it took us 7 years to get to $1 billion of revenue. It took Netflix 10 years to get to $1 billion of revenue. It took Spotify 7 years as well. So everything we're doing very well. So the question is, if you're so effective and so efficient and you have 11 straight quarters or 11 out of 12 quarters of exceeding expectations. And you're, you know, you've had the foresight in terms of feature sets like multi-view and really focusing on sports as a way to really build your base, then you tell me, what's the problem? What can it be? And the answer is simple. It's that we're being overcharged 30 to 50%. We're dealing with complexities around packaging. I'm not going to get into details of it because there's a lot of complexity there, but you know, we're forced to take on content that we don't want in order to access must-have programming. When I say must-have programming, it means that 80% of the sports content that the CFO of Disney said that they would have at launch. And then there are other restrictions, right? We don't get to carry ESPN Plus, although we pay more per subscriber than anybody out there. So there are things like that, elements that I think, you know, have been unfair. And I'm sure some of the other executives will say, you know, they're just crybabies. We're absolutely not crybabies. We're more than happy to take them on head to head, pound for pound. But, you know, we're just looking for equitable terms. You know, again, would you be okay if, you know, American Airlines, United Airlines, you know, I don't know, JetBlue or somebody decided to buy Boeing? How would we feel about that? Or if Citibank, JP Morgan, and Bank of America said, you know what, we're going to launch an online digital bank. So all we're saying is we want equitable terms. We're happy for consumers to have as much choice as they want. But for the last 7 years, we have provided consumers with a streaming service that was significantly more effective and efficient than cable. So we just want to continue that process, and we're happy to do that again on fair and equitable terms.
So you released the press release a few weeks back with regards to the fact that you have actually launched a lawsuit against the venture.
Yep.
You mentioned some of the reasons there, but why decide to take it to that extent, I suppose?
Well, I mean, you see the news yourself. Every week, it's something new. You know, they start with Plus services. That doesn't work. They call Verizon. They bundle it, you know, with other services. That doesn't work. I mean, they basically are throwing everything at the wall and hoping something sticks. And, you know, if you don't have any competitors, guess what? It's going to work. And so I think this was a clear opportunity for us to be able to communicate what we're actually dealing with. It was very difficult for us to go in and talk about each of these companies individually. But, you know, when you aggregate 80% of sports, it makes a much easier, you know, discussion for us to have as to why there is clearly anti-competitive impact here.
So you've intimated, but just to be clear, in terms of the competitive nature of the platform itself, you talked about the conditions which you're currently under is the main
right.
issue, not necessarily the launch of the platform. What impact do you think?
I don't think we've ever said, I mean, look, when we started this company, we were up against Sony PlayStation Vue, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, they complained to the DOJ back in 2014, and they're no longer here. So note to self. You know, there was T-Mobile's Vision product, Amazon Thursday Night Football, Peacock, Paramount Plus, you know, people still want to use an aggregated platform, and we've been very focused on ensuring. I mean, you know, we talk about friction and fragmentation now for, I don't know, since 2020. We've been the first to talk about the rebundling in our shareholder letter of March of 2021. So from my perspective, this is sort of normal course. You know, you should be able to compete for customer eyeballs, compete for wallet. And, you know, we think that we're very well positioned to be able to do that.
Obviously, it's only days with regards to what that platform will actually be, of the core focus of what networks and coverage will be on there has been covered. You obviously talk about the breadth of sports rights on the platform, and you call yourself the sports first platform. So how competitive really do you think that platform itself will be with what you're offering at the moment? Or do you think there's enough complementary nature that someone would subscribe to both?
Well, this is part of our claim, right? The reason why we're so bothered by this, and I'm surprised everyone here, well, I'm not surprised because I think I'll never get a job in media again after this. But the problem here really is the consumer side of it. How many people have at least four or five services to get the same experience you had 6 or 7 years ago? So it's gotten much more expensive. You can't find anything. You find yourself, I don't want to use any company examples here because I know that'll be used against me at some point. But, you know, the reality is, you know, they put one game on their service, push you into a quarterly or an annual plan, and now you end up paying for the same content sometimes twice, sometimes three times or more. And so when you sort of aggregate all of that cost, consumers are spending probably around $10 billion or so in excess fees to get the same content. It's immoral. It's not fair. And you know, we have an obligation to stand up for customers.
One of the quotes that has come out of the leadership group there has been the fact that there, I think it was Lachlan Murdoch who said it, that they believe, well, he believes they can get to 5 million subscribers in 5 years. What's your just your view on how achievable that is given, I guess, given your experiences so far?
Well, you know, when there's a lawsuit, you got to be careful what you say, so you don't want to make it sound too good to be true. So, you know, I would take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, again, there's so many examples. Look at Hulu SVOD, right? We all know the Hulu product. There has never been a competitor. That product is launched in 2008. Nobody has been able to build a service that can compete with it directly. You might be thinking Netflix or something else, but Netflix is 10 years older than Hulu. My view is that what'll happen is they'll probably start with 3 and then use the same playbook and get to 4 and then 5. And so they want to do it as quietly as possible. And, you know, fortunately, there's someone like Fubo here to make sure at least that everyone can see the truth.
Nick, you were in the room, you were sat on stage with him. Do you feel like he's onto something with this cartel? We've got to be a bit careful talking about legal sensitivities here, but it was an announcement that has been received in mixed ways. Some people think it's going to be a real game changer for the industry. Some people it's going to be a damp squib. What's your take?
Yeah, I think from a more general perspective, it's clearly there to attract that audience of, say, quote unquote, super fans of sport, general super fans of sport, right? Access all centralized and aggregated into one place. That is what Fubo is trying to offer, but with the extension of a lot of entertainment content. His line is come for the sports, stay for the entertainment was always been his line. His point, as you would have heard, is basically to do with the fact that there's a number of things that these people that he has got distribution deals with that he doesn't actually want. So they're paying what he believes to be significantly above market value for those rights that they have and those channels they have on the platform. And his point is that there seems to be something going on where they're getting a rawer deal than all the other stakeholders in the market who might have similar deals. And I don't know enough about the industry. I don't know enough about the nuance of some of those deals. But if that is the case, then yeah, maybe there is something in that. He seems to be clear that he's not suggesting they shouldn't be able to launch a platform, but he wants a fair marketplace for it. And I think everyone would largely agree with the idea of having a fair market. It's just so tricky when you've got the owners of the rights selling rights to certain partners and then telling them they have to maybe get the terms dictated on how they approach selling those rights to the market because of various laws and regulations that might exist. So really tricky and complex. I'm certainly not someone who can give a direction one way or the other. I could definitely understand why someone like Fubo TV would be concerned. And ultimately, their business is built on margins. So if they can get out, the net result of this is they get better rates on all their channels, their margins get better, they'll become more profitable more quickly, which is his ultimate goal in 2025, and they'll all be in a happier place. But time will tell to see how much they're willing to play ball with them.
I guess the offer for Fubo has always been that they are the place that aggregates all of these things, and now they're going to have a potential rival, albeit one that doesn't have access to everything, but has access to most stuff. Do you sense that he's concerned about how consumers are going to react to that?
Yeah, I think so. The line he used was, I think he said around, if I remember correctly, it was about 80% of American live sports is available currently on Fubo TV. The streaming product, the joint venture, is something like 55-65 or something like that. So it's a little bit lower. But Fubo is priced at a premium price point, right? It is probably the most expensive product of its type in the market for those reasons. So yeah, naturally, if someone comes in with more of a cut-priced offering, which almost offers the same thing, it's going to give consumers choice. But quite often, we've seen in this sort of consumer world we live in that sometimes the cheap is more likely to get if it's close enough to the real product. So yeah, I can definitely see some challenges around that mix, and inevitably there could be some cannibalization there. And one final point on that is I did challenge him or ask him about the fact that why are his subscriber numbers quite tame on the growth side next year. He sort of didn't answer that, basically, that they're being a little bit more cautious and focused more on bottom line. But they wouldn't buoy me with lots of excitement about, oh, they're still going to continue this rapid growth while they expect other competition to come to the market.
All right. Nick, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to go and hit the floor and find out what other people think about that session too.
So I've scoured the Sports Pro New York networking drinks and I've discovered Patrick Crakes of Crakes Media, a well-known analyst in the space. Patrick, I know you were only partially in David Gandler's session earlier, but perhaps if you could just give me your thoughts on the situation with Fubo and his stance towards the new big JV with ESPN, Warner Brothers Discovery, and the JV with Disney, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah, well, look, David's right to say that for years, the media companies, the media content owners, the channel owners have basically not allowed distributors to kind of pick and choose and repackage things, right? And I think that was probably the right decision for everybody back in the day when the pay TV bundle was the only option. That enabled the pay TV bundle to scale at a price that they wanted it to scale at and didn't have any churn. And pretty much everybody just took everything and they got a ton of content, right? But digital opens up the opportunities of segmented programming, and the content universe goes from having some kind of finite limit on channel space to infinite, you know, event horizon, a trillion miles wide, but a half an inch deep. And I think when you talk about what David's doing at Fubo, you know, he wants to be able to cut things up because he can. He wants to be able to find out different types of bundling that might resonate with larger segments of consumers, because right now a lot of the distribution in the digital space is either a replication of the old pay TV bundle on the digital side with all the costs but none of the real advantages. Like, the old pay TV bundle had government approval on its pricing. It had insulation from competition, right? It was treated like a utility. David doesn't have any of that. If he raises prices, he loses subs. So he needs to be able to figure out, if he packages different types of things, you know, will he find a larger segment? Because the alternative to being in a one bundle, one size fits all, is just delivering one thing in direct to consumer, like some of the RSN products that, in the case of Nesson 360, are $29.99 a month, so that they purposely don't compete with the pay TV bundles pricing, where Nesson is $8, so they don't make the distributor angry. So he needs some opportunities to try to figure that out. And he looks at the new JV and says, well, that's what I want to do. So I understand what he's saying. I think the problem is that the digital space in streaming is just so unprofitable in aggregate. We haven't figured out a model. David's right to scream, I want that flexibility too. But the old system, even though it's in decline, still pays all the bills. So we have this problem, this disconnect that I think everybody's starting to come to realization of. The old system's got to stick around for a little while, even if it's in secular decline. While we try to figure out what my friends at Fox and ESPN and the WBD want to do, and also what David wants to do, right? How do we rebundle, repackage this stuff, not just with video, but perhaps with services, to find a new bundle that can't ever replicate the natural monopoly of the old pay TV bundle, but might be good enough to maybe perhaps scale with some of general market, scale at a higher price, and perhaps because it's high quality, you don't have all these digital arbitrage pricing ninja warriors running around cutting you in a month and then coming back. So I get what he's saying. I understand it. It's just we're entering a phase now where we're going to have to spend the next 5 years figuring out how we make digital distribution profitable. At the very least, the first step is making it break even.
And if I was to get out a crystal ball right in front of you now and ask you for your prediction of where this kind of ends up, lawsuit, success, etc., without getting yourself in too much legal hot water, what do you see in 12 months' time? Where are we at?
Look, I think they proceed. They hired a CEO. My understanding is the whole thing's not completely papered yet. So, look, when you go through a disruptive phase, sometimes you make things up as you go along, and they're doing that. I think that entity will come into existence, and I think that there will be lawsuits. And I think part of those lawsuits will help us restructure properly. We're also going to go through, on the pay TV distribution side, just a couple days ago, DirecTV decided they were going to offer a package to their customers of just pay TV channels with no broadcast channels in it, so they can offer a package that doesn't have all the retransmission fees in it, just at a time when all the media cos are taking stuff off of their pay TV channels over to broadcast TV. So, you know, part of these renegotiations in distribution, the lawsuits, these new initiatives, help us sort out the new baselines. One of the things the old system had was a three-link value chain between distributors, the kind of channels, media cos, and the true content rights holders, whether that's a league or a team. I firmly believe that that Relink value chain, which Wall Street for many years thought didn't need to exist anymore, must exist on the digital side, just what kind of form that takes. And what we're going through, this disruption, is part of that. So the answer to your question is yes to everything. But I think it gets the ball further down the field. And we try to figure out a profitable way to cooperate so that we can at least get something back of what we used to have when it comes to the economics that really power the industry.
Patrick, thank you very much. I'll let you go back to enjoying your networking drinks.
Okay, that is it for this week's special On The Floor episode of the Sports Pro Podcast. We'll be back with some more regularly scheduled programming next week and some exciting interview guests coming up in the future too, I am very confident of. So, thank you very much. Goodbye.